Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Ivamy.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of heroic television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about a new trek to boldly go where I guess they've gone before, because technically this is the past of the Trek canon. But either Strange New Worlds.
We're talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We've kind of been here before. It's a spinoff of Discovery, but also it's like a prequel to OG Star Trek from the 60s. So yeah. It's like it's treading new ground, but like not.
Yeah.
It's a weird space to be.
It's dancing all over the place. And unintentionally, we have done a month of strange things.
It's a pretty strange month. We did Doctor Strange already. Mm-hmm. This is Strange New Worlds. And next week, Stranger Things, season 4.
Strange, like stuff's not normal. Stuff is not normal this month.
Big month for strange.
Big month for strange stuff.
Big old munch. And like the only thing in between all of those was Moon Knight, who's not that normal either.
Nah. He's all strange.
It's all pretty strange.
Khonshu ain't normal.
He's not your regular guy.
So if you are a fan of strange, abnormal things, it has been quite a month for all of us.
What a month that it's been, and a month to come. We haven't even seen Stranger Things yet.
That's true. That is true. So there is still much to happen. So today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We're going to be talking about the first three episodes of the show, how we feel so far, what we're liking, disliking, what we're looking forward to. So we're going to be talking about the first three episodes, third one included. So a spoiler warning for that, but not until we get to the theme song. So whenever we talk about a new television show or film, we give you a spoiler-free review in case you're on the fence about watching it, seeing it, not sure if it's worth your time, or if you just want a taste of the episode before you get caught up. So we're going to give you a spoiler-free review. Then once you hear the theme song, that's when we get into the spoiler-filled section. So let's start with a spoiler-free review. Diana, do you like it?
I love Strange New Worlds. I'm so in love. It feels like Star Trek. And like, I'm not going to spend the episode like being negative about other Star Treks, but there's been a lot of Star Treks lately. And they haven't really felt like Star Trek for a whole lot of them. Even ones that are spinoffs of old Star Trek. Hello, Picard. Which they're good in different ways and whatever, but this is the first Star Trek show in a while that like feels like Star Trek. You got like a diverse crew. It's a different adventure every week. They're not connected for the most part. There's like a little bit of a line of story going through, maybe more than like the 90s had, but not too much. And it's just like they go on fun adventures and they give each other pep talks and they have meaningful character arcs that only last one episode. And I like that. I love a Trek that you can just put any episode on and you get what's happening and it's completely contained. I love that. Not to say that the show doesn't have flaws. I think there are like a few little weird things that are happening, but usually first seasons of Trek are bad, so this is really popping off strong. Love Anson Mount. I love a lot of the cast. It's a couple cast members I've got like little criticisms about, not too many. So yeah, I'm excited to watch it every week, and that makes it a love. So I'm giving Strange New World a big old love, despite it having a few flaws. But Andrew, do you like Strange New Worlds?
I adore it.
Adore it!
I adore it. It is shooting endorphins straight into my bloodstream. Every moment of it it feels like a weight was lifted off of my chest. And it's so surprising for me because I very much enjoy Star Trek, mm-hmm. but I only kind of started getting into Star Trek later in life. It wasn't until like my late 20s that I actually really started appreciating it. It's not something I really grew up on. Like my sci-fi nerddom, not to, you know, make them compete or make it a battle, but the thing that like has like the childhood reverence and fondness for me is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I never really watched a lot of Star Trek on TV. I didn't get it. It wasn't my thing until later in life. And it's so weird that this show is giving me a sense of warm nostalgia for a thing I didn't even grow up watching. Uh-huh. And I can't figure out why that is. And it doesn't feel cheap.
It feels earned.
We're just doing it to make you feel like you did then. Because I didn't feel it then. But it feels like an era of like warm, story-driven, episodic television that isn't getting made anymore. And it makes me warm for an era of television, not even this series. And there's just so much about it that's so charming, so immediate. It is a dopamine hit in every possible regard. And I'm flush with joy while I watch this show. And it's, I think, brilliantly executed. You know, it's not above critique, as we'll get into, I'm sure, in the episode. There's, you know, one or two flaws here and there. I think it is undoubtedly the best first season of any Star Trek show ever. I mean, we'll see how it goes. We're only three episodes in. But
so far,
as you mentioned, every Star Trek series, you know,
season one is a stinker.
Season one's a bit of a slog until it finds its rhythm and it kind of figures it out. You know, Picard kind of knew what it was on season one, but this is hands down, like three episodes, it's like, oh, you know exactly what you're doing making this show.
It definitely helps. Yes, they do. Because it definitely helps that like three of the characters are like Discovery spin-off characters and two of them are like OG Star Trek from the 60s characters. Mm-hmm. And like the fan reaction was good. And then they were like, man, people really want episodic Star Trek back. And we do. And it's so good. And I love these like dueling kind of histories we have with Star Trek right now, because I'm a Trekkie. I've always watched all the Star Treks. I watched OG's Trek growing up, TNG, Voyager, all of them. So I was like, maybe my nostalgia is making me like this so much. But you're right. We rewatched Trek. I rewatched Trek with you in your late 20s when Netflix got it all of a sudden. And we watched all the Treks. So your lack of nostalgia like is like, oh, so I'm like, it is genuinely good.
Yeah,
and this isn't just my nostalgia being like, oh, I love Spock and I miss Pike. And
and for me, it's like I have watched all of the Treks except original series. I've seen some original series.
You didn't watch Enterprise.
Or did you? Oh, I watched some Enterprise. Okay, so I missed Enterprise, and I've only seen some original series. So it's not even like the time period that I have a nostalgia for as well, because it's not even the era of Trek that I have a particular reverence for. So yeah, very, very different histories with Trek coming into this show.
Mm,
yeah,
interesting. I love that. So this is a consensus of great things for Strange New Worlds. If you like Trek at all, please check out Strange New Worlds.
I honestly think if you don't like Trek at all,
ooh,
like I honestly watching this think that this would be a good, you know, someone who is younger now who is looking for an entry point into Star Trek, it feels like it, because even though it does have tie-ins with, say, Discovery or with the original series, I don't think those are load-bearing. And when they are, the narrative gives you all of the exposition that you need in order to catch up. Like, at no point is it like, if you don't know about Tribbles, this episode does not work. It is it so far seems to be well done enough that it would be a fantastic entry point, I think more so than Discovery, for a new viewer who wants an entrance into Trek.
I will agree. Yeah, this is a much more easily digestible Star Trek, even though I actually do think there's a little too much tie-in for the stuff, for previously existing stuff that isn't grown in this show.
I agree with that, and we'll
there
definitely get into that.
Less,
there
but
could be, but what is there? They recap it in a way that is not alienating, I would say.
No, it still works. Like, you still kind of have like a thing like maybe I'm going to Google that. Is that from the old show? Like once or twice, but it never affects the plots thus far.
Yes.
So it is kind of just like, you're like, I'm sure we'll get to that.
Yeah.
We'll explain that later.
And can it be spoiled?
Oddly enough, this latest episode could be.
Even then, I think that's pretty mild.
Yeah, it's pretty mild. Like, it's a TV
mild
show. It's
episodic. It is.
If you know who Spock is, you've pretty much figured out Star Trek.
Exactly. You know who Captain Pike is and what his story is going to become. It's an episodic Star Trek. There's not much to spoil here. You're going to be just fine.
It's fun.
It's very fun. It's an absolute delight. So now we are going to get into the more spoiler-filled section. But before we do, before you hear the theme song and we get into all of the tasty goodness, we want to thank one of our wonderful sponsors of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at Ghost Bed.
Oh, we love Ghost Bed. We love their products. We're going to tell you about the best beds in the game. Ghost Bed is made by Nature Sleep. They're an industry leader in mattresses since 2001, and they have what has been dubbed the coolest bed in the world. It's pretty freaking cool.
And they mean cool in regards to temperature. I guess it is also cool in terms of like the colloquial, like, that's pretty cool. Sam.
I mean,
it has both.
It's got a ghost in it.
It's a double meaning, and it has a ghost in it. It's very good. So they have quality and comfort at affordable prices. The reason it's the coolest bed, they have cooling technology in every mattress, so you sleep longer at night, and that's why they're backed by a 20 to 25 year warranty, which is twice the industry standard. They have a 101 night at home sleep trial, so you can try it out for 101 nights. If you don't like it, you can return it and get your money back. They ain't mad at it. You do what you got to do.
You return it if you want. If you don't like it, you will like it. And one great thing is you get free shipping, and most orders ship within 24 hours. So it's coming to you free. You get it for 101 nights to try it out. You're going to have a cool, cool sleep. Everything to love about Ghostbed.
Yes. And they also have mattresses, sheets, pillows. I've been sleeping on the pillow. Been very comfortable, breezy. I'm not waking up with that hot face in the middle of the night where I need to flip over the pillow.
You know me. I am wearing my mask. So my face gets incredibly hot most of the time. And my Ghostbed pillow is like, no, you're not. You're nice and cool despite that super thick blackout mask you're wearing, which is wildly impressive.
And the other thing that I like about having a pillow that like is cooling and I don't need to like wake up hot and flip it over in the middle of the night is that we have some of those pillowcases, you know, pillowcases that have like the slit in the middle as opposed to like sliding it in from the side.
Oh,
you
got
to put the pillow in through the middle. Those ones, no good if you flip them over.
Can't flip them.
Because then you got that fabric slit right in the middle of your face in the middle of that pillow. You need the side slip in order to flip a pillow over. So now I'm like, I got my nice ghost pillow in the pillowcase that is not conducive to flipping over, but I don't need to flip it over because it's nice, it's breathable, I'm cool, I'm comfortable, I'm having a great time.
Thanks for the great sleep, Ghostbed.
So to find your perfect mattress, check out ghostbed.com/TFS. Right now, Ghostbed is offering our listeners 40% off Ghostbed bundles where you get a mattress and adjustable base, or 30% off site-wide. That is 30% off all mattresses plus two luxury pillows. Use promo code TFS at ghostbed.com/TFS. Hurry to take advantage of these savings. That's ghostbed.com/TFS and use promo code TFS. And thank you for your support, Ghostbed.
Thank you, Ghostbed.
And now let's get into the spoiler-filled section. Let's talk about Strange New Worlds. So we have been watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds, episode 1-3. We are delighted. We are overjoyed. It is such a refreshing show to watch.
I can't even describe the feeling that I know both of us were having watching episode 1. We both just kind of like cuddled in a way, like into our own bodies, into a nice comforting way that a show has not made us do before. You're just like, I'm entertained. I'm engaged. This is nice. There's like a little bit of danger, but I feel safe and comforted. Like, what a wonderful viewing experience it's been. I'm just like, I feel like an old friend is back that I haven't seen in years. And I'm like, I've missed you. Tell me your story while we were away.
Even the first scene of this show, kind of encapsulating the entire feeling of watching this show so far. And like a really good setup for what the show's going to be, because it starts with like this kind of like, here's the beautiful thing about space. And you see like the back of the heads of people, like a classroom and a chalkboard and talking about space. And then like they turn around, you realize it's this alien species looking up and seeing Starfleet. And they are not a space-faring species yet. And looking up in wonder and using like this alien species as a proxy for the audience to be like, isn't space awe-inspiring and fills you with like warmth and intrigue for the unknown and fills you with the infinite potential of possibilities? And just starting the show with that, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, yes, space does make me feel like that. Thank you for reminding me that that's what space feels like.
What's incredible is that space genuinely, aside from Star Trek, doesn't make me feel like that. I think space is terrifying. You die in the cold. It's empty.
It's also terrifying.
Yes. But in a Star Trek world, it's lovely. It is safe, and you just are like, I want to explore it. And it's the fact that like the Starfleet is just so like, we're exploring. We have weapons to defend ourselves, but this is exploration, and it's just so lovely, and you feel the vibes immediately of exploration, and for the opening VO being about first contact.
Yeah.
And like changing lives and everything. Very, very lovely stuff.
Yeah, it's just like just a nice VO to be like, here's what space travel represents. Because I agree with you, Diana. Space is terrifying. Space is terrifying. It will kill you.
You need. I would never ever go to space until we get Star Trek level ships. Like, it's got shields. It's got multiple space ain't gonna kill you backup systems. Because I feel right now we're at like one level of defense against space. We got a wall.
If a thing goes wrong, things go very wrong. But what the concept of safe space travel represents.
Yes, I agree. But I think
beyond that, what the concept of potential and the exchange of knowledge represents also, which is just the beautiful thing about Trek and that this show understands about Trek as well. It's an exchange of cultures and ideas that make everyone better for their cultural understanding, which is brilliant and important and beautiful.
It's an exchange of ideas. It's allegories to our own life almost every episode, but in a way that doesn't like beat you over the head with it. You're just like, yeah, I totally agree. I watch Star Trek. I wouldn't argue with anything Star Trek says most of the time.
Absolutely.
I love the stuff you're saying. So to go right to the beginning, one very silly goof right off the top. I really like the opening. Like the beautiful shots of the ship and like the music is really nice. The little bit of old music is wonderful and it really rings true. I absolutely hate how close it is to Lower Deck's silly opening.
For the theme song and the images
even
over
just
the theme
images
music.
Are very, very similar and it's giving me such a weird tone of like, it's a pretty serious show, it's not a comedy, and then the opening comes up and I'm like, Lower Deck's opening is so funny.
Boimler's about to get sucked into that black hole and then like spin away and they're gonna away from Borg or whatever.
They're gonna nope away from the Borg any minute now, where that cloud's got a giant tentacle monster in it, and it's very similar and it's silly. And it will be like less silly as we go on. I'm just like, Lower Decks is the most recent Star Trek we've watched, and I'm like, this is a very lovely opening, but it's just a very, very back of your mind. You're just like, pretty close to Lower Decks. It's probably the closest to Lower Decks of any other opening that I could think of.
Yeah, I would say so. And I think that is, it's unintentionally funny, I agree. And I think that is part of the charm of this show, where it's like, we understand the heart and core of Star Trek, and Lower Decks is very much, we have figured out how to parody the heart and core of Star Trek. Like, both of those shows have such a strong understanding of what this property is and how to work within that, that I think it's unintentional, but the similarity between both of them, I think, shows an understanding of the core and heart of what this is.
I will actually agree with that. Yeah, Lower Decks is a very different property, but it absolutely understands Star Trek.
Yeah.
I've never thought this doesn't get it, even though it's a cartoon and it's a parody and it's about, like, small characters. It knows what Star Trek is.
Yeah, 100%.
Or what, like, you know, what the traditionally it has been. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that in the first episode, in the way this series starts, I really enjoy it. I would say one downside is they do play a little bit hard in that first episode, and thankfully they've eased off the gas pedal a little bit in how much it ties into Discovery.
Yeah.
Which I don't feel like is really necessary. Like, we're not getting a crossover of, you know, I guess we are getting a crossover of characters, but in the sense that Pike has always been around since the original series and exists, and it's not.
He was the captain on Discovery for one season, which we watched only half of. We didn't see him end on Discovery.
Yeah.
It is too much. I agree. It's a couple episodes. It's like, oh my God, there's. In each episode, there's a little bit too much connection to old things that I actually don't, even as a Trekkie who understands it, I'm like, I don't like how unintegrated this is, how non-standalone.
Yeah, yeah, and very unnecessary, and it also makes it kind of feel like a spinoff of a spinoff, which it doesn't need to be. Like, I would say that what it feels like at times, the equivalent for like Star Wars would be if the upcoming Obi-Wan show was like, it's a spinoff of The Mandalorian. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? It's a character from the mainline thing. You don't need to make it.
We know who Obi-Wan is.
You've spun off from the spun-off so far that you've actually circled back to the mainline. And I feel like you can just have confidence within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when I get that they want any fans of Discovery and anyone who kind of grew to like this character and Anson Mount as Pike on Discovery, they want those fans to come over. But that's work that you do on Discovery, not that you waste on your pilot episode.
Yeah, I definitely don't mind all the stuff about him seeing his future and what happens in 10 years. I think that's super interesting.
And clearly the premise of where they're going.
Yeah, strongly recapped. It really makes the character different than the character we've seen before, and like the J.J. Abrams Pikes and stuff. Like, this is a Pike who knows his future. Very interesting stuff. Well recapped. We definitely did not need episode one to relate to something with happened with the Kelpians and warp drives on the end of Discovery season two or three or whatever season that was. That was so absolutely unnecessary. I'm like, I didn't watch that, and now I feel like you're being a jerk. And you're being like, you didn't watch that season of Discovery? I'm like, you didn't recap this like you did the fucking Pike saw his future, and then he tells Spock the whole story. Because they told Spock the whole story.
Yeah.
And that, like, explained it in flashbacks. In this one, they were just like, we opened up a big wormhole. I'm like, what? That didn't tell me anything. I didn't watch that.
And it's only plot relevant to the inciting incident of that episode, whereas the Pike seeing his own future stuff is plot relevant to an arc of the series. Mm-hmm. So that is more important to recap and reiterate and kind of hit home. But other than that, like, little goof, I do like this warring nation in that have advanced technology that they don't understand and aren't necessarily ready for, and interrupting to try to undo the damage is always a good classic. Federation premise to be like, no, we have to break the rules because we already broke the rules, so we got to break them harder to get back on track.
We accidentally broke a rule we didn't know about, so now we got to break a rule we know about, but where our hearts are in the right place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do like that. I really liked all the stuff on the planet where they were like making themselves look like aliens and they were sneaking in. I'm going to poke a couple holes in the episode that did confuse me.
Just don't send Spock.
Don't send Spock. He wasn't even like, we need Spock for one specific thing. It was like, don't send the guy who can't change his face.
Yeah.
Just send somebody else. Mostly I was going to be like, they weren't that advanced. Like, they had a warp bomb.
Yeah.
But they didn't have space travel yet. They didn't have any of this other stuff. I'm like, how did they shoot you from space? Like, they shot you with, like, really good missiles from space that would have taken you out from the planet, even though they can't go to space yet. They don't know about space travel.
Did they?
Yeah,
they shot them, did they?
Yeah, they did, because the Sing was like, we got to put the shields up. There's missiles incoming.
Oh, and interesting.
It was kind of like, how did you get everyone off the ship? And Rebecca Romijn, like, you seem like you're way more advanced than you end up being.
Interesting. I think they said it was like basic phaser missiles, which seemed like they were like, it's some basic B stuff that they have.
Mm.
But I guess maybe they might be advanced enough that they have a surface-to-space missile that they've maybe recently figured out, and maybe they have space travel similar to our space travel.
Just that one layer.
Yeah, 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 where it's like you can get to a moon in a jalopy, but like there's no replicator, there's not a big ship full of people with a disc that can...
No, it's an RV.
Yeah.
Of space.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So yeah, okay, I forgot about the shooting, and maybe the Spock was my big plot hole problem with
Spock
it.
Is the most obvious one because it's happening in front of you, and then my plot holes were things I thought about. I'm like, how'd you get Rebecca Romijn off her ship?
Yeah, the ship was empty.
Empty!
That also didn't make sense.
Were there three people on that ship?
That also...
It looked like a giant Federation-class ship.
So I was expecting, like, hundreds, if not thousands of people have been, like, abducted or converted into the alien species or on... Because they were like, there's no bodies, there's no one unconscious, the ship is derelict.
So they took everyone.
But apparently, I guess they just did a 100%...
Away mission. They left the ship empty.
Yeah, they were like, let's leave it idling for when
we'll
we want to go.
Put the autopilot on.
I guess.
As far as I know, back in this day, you couldn't even use the transporters on automatic, though. You need a guy. You need Ensign Kyle or Chief Kyle.
Yeah, few little plot holes. But other than that, like a really fun adventure, a fun metaphor for like the problems of humanity and warring nations and the problems of having weapons when you're not ready to have peace.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely a great episode. Great themes going on. Really explored nicely in a way. Very bold to use actual footage of Jan 4. I was like, wow,
yeah.
Star Trek ain't messing around anymore, you guys.
And I love that. Why were we messing around to begin with? You know, like just...
We know who the watch in Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah, we know what these are metaphors for, so just go all in. Sure, why not? And I think the implication, I didn't know that, like, there was, we nuked the Earth.
Oh, yeah, there's a second world war, or a second civil war.
Yeah, or a second civil war, and I think he said a third world war. Yeah.
I don't know if those are two different wars, or if we just can't decide what that one war was called, because then there's also eugenic wars later. There's been a lot of wars. Starfleet takes a long time to...
But eugenic war is interplanetary.
I just don't know enough about the eugenic wars.
I think, okay, yeah.
They have space travel by the time the eugenic wars happen.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's Starfleet yet.
Okay. Interesting. So yeah, we've had some problems, and it's a lovely speech that he gives, like in that government hearing place, and kind of breaks everything down. It's beautiful. A beautiful first episode.
It is a beautiful first episode. And what I like about, even though we're already only three episodes in, I do like that they're already doing a mix of, like, this is a serious episode with a real theme. And then episode two is just like Uhura isn't sure if Star Trek is for her, Starfleet is for her, and how she got here is not the same way other people. And it's just a very human story of an individual that maybe people relate to. And then we get back to a big theme story, and then we'll probably have another very human small story. And I love the scale of good Star Trek. I'm just like, not every week is going to be like a giant human issue. It's going to be just Uhura not sure if she should have a place in Starfleet if it wasn't her dream. I'm like, oh, relatable as hell. Absolutely.
And I think, too, like, the brilliant thing of alternating that. So the Uhura episode was also great. I think the other nice thing about what they've done so far, and they seem to keep doing, is seeding in these kind of B themes and moral tales that relate to Pike's future and the tragic event of saving people's life. So, in that Uhura episode, it is this comet, this self-aware deity-like comet that seems to have precognition and the ability to see the future. And in seeing the future, predicts that Spock is going to drive a shuttle to break off part of its ice to make sure it doesn't collide with a planet, which actually creates life, which is kind of paralleling what Pike's story is going to be, which is seeing the future and setting into place the events that will save other people, and knowing that it's going to happen and not altering course, and in that setting into effect the course that is going to do it. So these little things about whether or not you can change your future if you see it, and even in that first episode to be like, here is your future, change that. And they seem to be alternating so far back and forth as to whether or not the future is malleable and something that can be changed or something that we are on course for. And I like playing with those themes in parallel with what's going on with Pike.
I really like that. And this is one of the first times I've seen a storyline of, like, I know my death, I've seen the future, and I really resonate with the reason he's not going to try to change it. Like, I don't feel like, because, like, I think sometimes you'll see someone's future and it's like, oh, I got stabbed by my friend. It's like, well, don't stand there and let them stab you when that happens. Like, it'll just kind of be like that kind of future. But he sees a future where he saves lives. He's like, I'm not going to not save them. Yeah. Like, you know, maybe I can work out a way where we all live. That would be great. But if I have to, I will die for these people. And I'm like, oh, man, that is the best reasoning to keep your death future.
Yeah.
It's really lovely. And, like, when he brings it up, because, like, they're all only, like, children right now, because they're going to be like ensigns, I guess, when it happens in 10 years. So he brings up their files and they're just like 10-year-old kids, 13-year-old kids. You're like, oh yeah, of course he would just intrinsically be like, I have to save children.
Yeah, like that's just who he is.
Yeah, it's a really lovely story and a great way to frame, like, he did see his future but won't change it, but maybe he will. Like, I really am actually on board with the flip-flop nature of will I change this or not? And it seems like something I wouldn't be.
And it seems like something that, like, they're not going to have to deal with right away. And that's nice.
Yeah, they can
continue kind of exploring these ideals. And it's something that you can explore, I think, infinitely. And it isn't necessarily tiring, because the exploration of destiny, life, and what a life's value is also one of the inherent premises of Star Trek and the microcosms of what all of these individual planetary stories are.
Yeah, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. But then you always have to save the few who die too.
and Pike.
Oh my God, Anson Mount's so good.
Anson Mount is fucking phenomenal.
I don't know how it's like this late in his career that he's like blowing up. Because we loved him as Black Bolt of all things. A man who didn't speak.
Yes. Like, in a show that didn't work.
And Humans was a bad show if you listen to a review of it. Anson Mount in a and a character with no dialogue was so charming, so incredible, and so good. You let this man speak? Oh, shit, he's unstoppable.
So charming, so fun. And he popped on Discovery as well, yes, which I think did. Is part of the reason why they greenlit this series.
Get this man his own show.
We've got to get this man his own show. It works so well. And he's brilliant, and he's charming, and he's likable, and he is everything that you want in a captain, and I am down for Hit It as his version of Engage. Fuck it. Let's do colloquialisms. Let's have fun. I am all about it.
I love it. He's so good, especially because this is the kind of only era in Star Trek where captains go on away missions. So like Picard didn't go on away missions and Janeway, but in the early days, captains went. So having a very charming, kind of adventurous, rugged captain makes way more sense in this time frame. Like, he's like, I'm going to the planet. I'm going to meet the aliens. I'm going to fight the ghosty ones. He has to be a man you're willing to follow into danger, quite literally on foot on an away mission. And I believe it. I want to be under his command. I'm like, I would follow you anywhere, sir. I believe in you, and I like you.
His delivery, yes, his delivery of the line when Uhura shows up to the party in her formal uniform, and he just goes, formal uniform, huh? And just that's it, and that's it.
But and he gets the prank that's been played.
And to have one line, and to have a line as simple as, ha-ha, formal uniform, huh? Mm-hmm. On paper, that is such a nothing line, and he imbues it with charm and charisma, and in that one line that doesn't say anything, says everything about his understanding of the situation, his acceptance of it, what he understands that the crew put each other through, as long as no harm is done. He's
totally cool with it.
So much implied in the performance that he gives of one relatively menial line.
Yeah, he kind of feels like if Riker was a captain whose energy was leadership charm instead of sexual charm.
Ooh, yeah.
Because he doesn't have the sexual charm of Riker, but Riker's sexual charm is just through the roof.
Right, he's platonic Riker.
Platonic Riker. He's your friend Riker.
The platonic ideal of Riker is something I did not realize I needed in my life, but even saying it out loud, I'm like, of course, you need a platonic Riker. That is absolutely the most charming person.
And you also need a regular Riker, but it's nice to have different layers of Riker.
Yeah. You want to be horny from time to time.
You gotta get a little horny.
But yeah, the person in charge, you want to be a platonic Riker. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Anson Mount is incredible. Oh my God, he's worth watching just for this show.
I can fully agree with that. He does a phenomenal job and a great performance, and I think Pike just kind of works as a character as well. They've really got this down.
They've got it down. They do really great interactions with every character with Pike. The show is very much people actually sit down and talk, and it's not just scene after scene that's moving too fast or being too deep. It's just let's have a conversation and the camera can just sit for a second.
Love it.
It's nice.
Well, let's take a quick break in the episode to thank one of our other wonderful sponsors of today's episode. We want to thank our good friends over at MasterClass.
Oh, I love using my MasterClass pass because you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. They have over 100 classes from a range of world-class instructors, and the thing you've always wanted to learn about, you can learn about from the people who do it absolutely best.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I'm just burning through classes. I've mentioned before on the podcast, they have Nancy Cartwright doing voice acting, which has been phenomenal. Now that it's spring, I've started watching Ron Finley teaching gardening. And I'm
you love to garden.
I love a little garden. And it's charming and it's fun. And it's so easy and intuitive. And they've got a great app. And you can pick up where you left off. And you can do it in shorter snippets or longer binges, depending on what your time frame might be, which makes it really easy and convenient. And I think that they've also found the perfect blend of great production value and execution that explains an idea to you while still not bordering into full entertainment. It is great edutainment. I feel engaged and happy and entertained the entire time while still learning and retaining information that I'm going to use.
Yeah, it is a really great in-between of watching a documentary and going to a university class. It's just this wonderful, I'm entertained, I'm learning, it's at my own pace. The little function to take notes is so lovely. It's a really well-built app. I'm taking Matthew Walker's class, Science of Better Sleep, because I love sleeping and I do it pretty well, but I want to be the best.
Dude, you've been good.
I can up my game. Yeah, I'm gonna be teaching the next class on sleep after this, but it's a very, very fun class about how you can just like understanding sleep and like getting better at it.
And one thing you mentioned that I do really like too was the ability to take notes kind of built into the app.
Very cool.
As opposed to I do not need one more online doc or notepad that has random things referencing stuff from other programs and apps, and like my online cloud storage has become just like a mess. So yeah, just put it in line, make it easy for me to jot something down or make a little note to myself when I need to, which is smooth and brilliant, and it's a great part of the app and their design.
There's also downloadable materials as well for almost every class. So you can also, if you don't want to take notes, they're like, here you go.
Love it.
We did them.
Well, we highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass. And as a Talk From Superheroes listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. So go to masterclass.com/TFS now. That's masterclass.com/TFS for 15% off Masterclass. And thank you, Masterclass, for your support and your wonderful guides.
Thank you so much, Masterclass.
And now back to Strange New Worlds. We were talking a few moments ago about how Pike is wonderful. I think most of the cast is killing it here.
Most of the cast is very, very good. Ethan Peck as Spock is the third Spock we've ever had. That's a lot. It's very hard to be a beloved character. I'm not sure where he's placing for me. I actually think Zachary Quinto's also a very good Spock.
There's been
no bad Spocks. Is a nice thing. And I've been trying to think of. I'm like, oh wow, there's been a lot of Spocks recently. He kind of feels like the antithesis to like playing the Joker. It's like.
That's great.
It's like, you know how like Hamlet was the big thing for actors and now the Joker is the big thing for actors, but the Joker's like, you got to be so big. And Spock with Spock, you got to be so small.
Spock is soft boy Joker. And I love that.
You have to be so reserved, but also like interesting. It's a very difficult role.
I really love that.
As the reverse Joker
kind
for
man,
acting.
Kind man Joker. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he is doing a great job. And I'm actually really happy to see him in here because we saw him on Discovery.
And that felt weird.
And it felt weird. I feel like the writing of his character in that storyline didn't really work in Discovery. And it was just a little bit forced. And that was one where, you know, when we talked about at the beginning of the episode how all of this feels like warm and nostalgic without feeling cheap. And in Discovery, it felt very much like, it's Spock. Remember him? He's the guy that you all remember. Please remember Spock.
It felt very desperate on Discovery. And they were like, isn't it cool that Spock's here? And we're like, why is Spock here?
Yeah.
He doesn't fit this world. Like, Discovery, like, your costumes are weird and your technology's too far ahead. And Discovery has great elements that people like. It's not for me. But, like, Spock doesn't fit in that world. And we've never established he had a sister in all the times he's been around. So, like, for him to just be on this show now, and he's like, classic Spock, he hardly ever brings up Michael Burnham. It was like one throwaway line in episode one, and since then he's been like, whatever.
Yeah,
I won't bring her up again for years and years and years on this show and on Star Trek with Kirk. And
yeah.
So yeah, he feels like he belongs here, and he didn't feel like he belonged on
Discovery.
Absolutely.
And it's refreshing. Like, I'm enjoying seeing him as a performer really fill this character a lot better because the writing was a little bit stilted and forced on Discovery. I was like, I don't know if he's a good Spock. I can't quite get a good read on him. I definitely never, like, blamed him, but it was just like, I don't know. And now throughout the show, I'm like, oh, yeah, no, yes, actually very much yes. You're making it work. And you get this character.
He gets him. I do like that the makeup department and like everyone has decided he does not have to shave his eyebrows as much as Leonard Nimoy had to. He's kind of just got the ends off. Leonard Nimoy was like half his eyebrows were gone.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we'll let you. You can keep most of your eyebrows. Just have a little bit of a wing.
just gonna touch it up a little bit.
And I'm sure he's like, oh, thank God, because then you can just fill it in with like an eyebrow pencil.
Yeah, I can fill it in when I want to audition for other roles.
Or just go out in public. like, you don't want half your eyebrows gone.
Fair enough.
Going to get some grocery.
Fair enough. It does. It definitely helps you stay incognito as an actor. I think you
take
you're
the
less,
ears off.
Yeah, you're less recognizable as Spock when you're out in the world with standard human eyebrows and ears.
I think for this guy, that's true. I think Leonard Nimoy has such a memorable face that it probably never helped him at all.
Yeah, you're right. Nimoy did have a very memorable face.
A specific man. Whereas Ethan Peck here, I'm like, you could be other men.
Fair enough.
But Leonard Nimoy was the only man who ever looked like Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also like Uhura is doing Celia Gooding. Celia Rose Gooding, phenomenal job as Uhura. I really think that it pops.
I really like Uhura. I could have used like less like of that whole singing plot line. It went a little too long. That wasn't her fault. But as like an actor, really crushing it. That whole captain's dinner scene was so long, and like she had so much to do. They gave her so much character development so fast.
Yeah, and a really like interesting conflict and backstory, and kind of exploring this character. And I think a really good job of, for someone who does, you know, carry through to the original series, of kind of exploring what a younger and different perspective for this character might be without undermining who the character becomes. Very smart and well executed, and a great performance and delivery from her as well.
Yeah, I have no complaints on Uhura. I also really like Singh, the security officer. I was surprised how much I liked her.
Ooh, see, I like Ortega.
Oh, I like Ortega.
Ortega's going to be the shit. Ortega's is cool. Yeah. If I don't get an Ortega episode soon, I'm going to fucking rock.
I mean, we're only three in.
I know.
Everyone gets one eventually.
I know, but I'm still sweating. I'm like, Ortega better get a goddamn episode.
When Ortega's is like in the captainship and they like get attacked, and she's just like, every time I'm in the chair.
Melissa Navia is doing such a phenomenal job of Ortega. Mm-hmm. I'm ride or die Ortega at this point. And it's also like, there is something about this character that I'm like, this might be a Riker energy for me. We talk about how Pike is a platonic Riker and a promoted Riker, but I'm like, you seem like roguish and fun and like a party person. Like
Riker would tell someone to wear dress clothes to a thing where you're not supposed to wear dress clothes.
Yeah. At any given moment, Ortega could step over a chair and into it, and I'd be like, yes, that is exactly what you do.
That's how you get into chairs, Ortega's. Yes.
100%. Mm-hmm. You walk into chairs like that.
Yeah. No, she's really cool. I think it's faster to go through like the like slightly less enjoyable ones. I don't love Nurse Chapel. I think episode 3 was the calmest she's been and most palatable.
She came in a little hot. I can't tell if that's all writing or performance choice. It might be a performance choice of being a bit much, but we'll see.
She's a bit much in a way that feels too like modern in this world, like in our world. Like she does not feel like a Star Trek character. Like she's like a little bit too casual. I'm like, I don't feel like you went to Starfleet. Like you don't have any discipline in you at all. You're just way too casual about things. Like, is it your first day? If she was like some kind of like civilian character, I'd be like, cool. But the fact that she is a Starfleet officer, I'm like, no, you wouldn't act this way. You wouldn't call people sister when you give them a shot of something.
Yeah.
That fucking sucked. Yeah, I hated that.
That felt very forced and forced and pandering.
To her credit, I don't think Security Chief Singh liked it either, and I was with her on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was too much familiarity right away, Chapel.
Yeah, she's coming in with a hot, like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia crosstalk type of energy, which is like, it's way too modern. And I like that everyone on this cast, or most of everyone on this cast, is giving a modernized performance, but she is doing it at a full 10, and I feel like that's not quite the right place to be. Like, even like an 8. Like, if it goes down just a 10 to 20%, I think this might be the sweet spot for the character.
I love what you just said about, like, crosstalk performance, because that's exactly what it is. It's kind of like the performance you give when people maybe will just improvise some lines, or you're just trying to get somewhere, and you're like, maybe it'll be funnier if we do this. But Star Trek is a very... You have to say what's on the page. This is like scientific nonsense usually. You can't just be like, oh, the midichlorians, oh shit. That's not going to work. You got to say what's on the page.
Which I think brings me to like one of the other, I would say like small issues with the show is Rebecca Romijn. I feel like is stiff and not really fitting in.
She's stiff and not fitting in and is given so little to do until episode three, like wildly underused until then for the second lead, who's also the carryover from Discovery. And I think the biggest name on the show, like Anson Mount kind of became big because he was so liked on Discovery, but Rebecca Romijn's like Mystique. She's been around for forever. I think maybe she will get, I don't know if the stiffness was a choice until after this episode. About the reveal about, like, I'm Illyrian, all this. And I actually think a big mistake to me is having this episode so early. Because, like, this just felt very, this Illyrian episode, it felt very, like, unseated. Like, we didn't get anything before this episode about people who'd been genetically changed. We hadn't heard about Illyrians. We hadn't had any hints that she wasn't human because she hasn't had any lines or anything to do. So it just kind of,
this
I would
big
put
build
this,
up and release, but it's all happening in a very compressed time.
Yeah, I would have put this way later in the season. Like, I think it's an episode that works and it's a storyline that's really important and cool, but like, it's too early in the season. It hasn't been seeded in at all. Like, it's very similar to Bashir's storyline on DS9, but they waited till season four to reveal he was genetically modified. It had a little bit more like, we know this person and we see how smart he is and we're not surprised he was genetically modified because he's too smart. And this kind of just came up like, has she ever been strong before? Like, she's had two lines before this. Like, there was no build up to it.
No, I agree with that. It wasn't earned. It certainly wasn't earned. And I think that's definitely a writing issue for this character that they're having. My main thing is just a bit performance based.
She's a little stiff.
It's a little stiff. And with all of the characters, with the exception of the nurse Chapel, who is going maybe a bit too modernized, everyone else is modern in a great way. And Rebecca Romijn is kind of doing original series or maybe even like Next Generation at best, where it's a little bit theatrical. It's a little bit, even when you're shaky and emotional, still clear diction. So it is, Rebecca Romijn is reading the lines and not adding small stutters or effort sounds. Like, she's worried about getting very clear, crisp audio where she's like, I've been injured, Captain. And it's almost Vulcan in her performance.
She'd be a great Vulcan.
I think she actually would be a great Vulcan, but it's very clear. Whereas everyone else on this show, and Star Trek hasn't always been this, so it's a choice for the tone of the show, is giving very like ums and ahs and little sounds where it'll just be like, Captain, I've been injured. And like, those little ums and ahs are not something that you got from original series and only sometimes would get from Next Generation. And it's a very modern, organic type of acting to be like, sometimes you talk down into your chest, sometimes you're not projecting, sometimes you um and ah. Even that delivery of the line that Pike gave that we love, where it's just like, formal uniform, huh? And is a very modern contraction that I don't think anyone on original series ever said,
No.
That has never occurred. And just a long breath that isn't edited out by the sound designer is very modern. And Rebecca has none of that. There's no, there's no sounds. There's no nothing.
No,
it's too clean. Way too clean.
Yeah, almost like she's just doing like the ADR in her own performance live. I agree with this. I will say this is very much her acting style, though. You didn't watch The Librarians. It was a show 5 years, I think, and I liked it. But she was very similar to this, but she was like a military person. And she was also the Guardian character, and she did all the fight scenes. So she had to be very strong and very like in your face. So like it kind of worked a little better there, but she's not the security officer here. She's not, Starfleet is a kind of military, but if everyone else is going a little bit more modern and casual, she is standing out as a different acting type.
Yeah, it is. I agree with you. That is, I've seen
style.
It in other things. That is her style, and you have to cast accordingly to that. And I think if she were a Vulcan in this show, for example, if she played Spock's fiance, I would be like, oh shit.
Nailed it.
Yeah, that is exactly it. But as the rogue captain's favorite number one, it doesn't feel like, when Pike's just like, man, we've had some wild, bullshitty adventures, huh? And she's like, yeah, we certainly have. Like, okay, I don't really feel this rapport that you both are implied to have.
Definitely. And especially because it kind of just doubles down on relationships if she's this stiff, because Spock's the stiff one. He is a Vulcan. His whole character trait is, my captain is a casual rogue, and I'm an uptight science guy.
Yeah.
So Rebecca Romijn being just, like, also a little uptight and the second in command, it's not adding anything.
Yeah. I'm with. Hopefully she figures it out and maybe kind of, like, over the course of the season matches the other actor's energy and performance and dialogue.
Or finds a differentiating thing to make this character stick out a little more.
Yeah, she increases her casualness dial up by two, and Nurse Chapel decreases it down by two.
Oh, they have to have an exchange of energies or something.
If they can exchange like 2 points of energy between one another, then I feel like it's a very even and excellent performing cast. Mm-hmm. And that's all you need. It's just that little shift.
I can do with a shift. I will accept this. A small other thing I meant to bring up when we were talking about how connected everything is I also, just in terms of like connectedness, I don't know why Singh has to be related to Khan. That seems like, oh wow, that's a lot of Star Trek that we're throwing in the first few episodes. Like, it feels like kind of what we said about Spock on Discovery, like a little desperate, like, isn't this character cool? She's related to Khan. And it's like, Khan's in too many things. We know Khan's cool, yeah. And he had the best Star Trek movie. We get it. But or reveal that way later. Again, coming out of the gate so hard with these reveals.
I also agree with that. That felt very like season finale type of thing. To be
I'm
like,
Khan's ancestor.
If you're dropping Khan, you've got to
casually.
You've got to hit it hard and not just like it's an episode 3 a B story about why I'm conflicting with number one and why like I'm gonna have a slight argument while under a light traveling disease, which also could be the reason for us to have an argument. It doesn't even really motivate the plot of that episode. It's kind of a throwaway. And that's too big for a throwaway. You have to earn that.
Yeah, it will be like it will come up later, I assume. I don't know if we're gonna meet Khan in this show, if they're gonna change the timelines. Who knows what we're dealing with these days. But yeah, I was when they were like, I have this crazy backstory where I was alien food for most of my life, and I'm like, okay, and also I'm Singh and also I'm Khan's ancestor. I'm like, that's too many things.
Yeah.
This new girl's got I like her, I like her performance, I think she's cool. That's too many things.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Yeah, and I was and like and growing up in school, they would like
they call
me
Augment
and Augie. So it's like now
and then aliens try to eat me.
I'm just like so it's like, okay, what is your thing? Are you dealing with the shame of a legacy of a family that has done harm? Are you dealing with subjugation and feeling othered and oppressed or bullied? Are you dealing with the trauma and PTSD of life-threatening fear of being food? It's like
Your family become food because she said they all died.
Any one of these is literally a full season arc. So mm-hmm. They've piled on maybe a bit too much too soon.
Yeah, Pike's dealing with one thing.
Right.
He saw his own death. And this girl's got like three things. And I'm like, you're not even the lead. It's way too many for a side character.
Yeah.
They're all interesting. But like, spread them around.
Mm-hmm.
Share the wealth of backstories. Although they're giving everyone quite interesting backstories. The doctor very suddenly having his daughter in the buffer is like tragic, but also, again, just too sudden. They're throwing it all in so fast. No hints.
And they're throwing it in pretty fast. That one was another example of I'm like, I really think that we're building, and I'm interested to get your take on this. I really think that we're building to changing Pike's future, to finding a way of having it all. Because whether it comes to Rebecca Romijn being genetically augmented and should quit Starfleet, or the doctor having his daughter trapped in a buffer, which is against regulations, it seems like we keep building to this thing where it's like, we're going to break a rule to save a life and a career.
Mm.
And it's like, we can change things. We're going to break a rule. We're going to change it. We're going to change the future. Save her in the buffer. I don't care if it breaks Starfleet regulations. We're going to save that daughter's life at some point down the road. Like, that level of, like, we're going to delay the problem. We're going to figure it out. And we're going to break a rule to do it.
Mm.
I don't think he'll sacrifice lives to do it.
No.
But I think that very much the, like, you almost killed people on this ship because of this thing you've done with the medical transporter to store your daughter in the buffer. But we can't allow you to kill people on the ship or endanger people on the ship because of it. But we will find a workaround to both have the safety of the people on this ship and save that life. And I think that that is kind of where we're going to be building with Pike, is to change his future. But what do you think? Are they going to change his future?
I think they're going to try. And I think he's not going to try. But I think the crew is going to try. I think they're going to get some kind of inkling of what will happen, or like figure out like we could do a sacrifice play to save Pike. Because as we said, Pike will not put people at risk. But everyone is willing to risk things for each other. Like Pike is like, I'll deal with Starfleet if it comes out that you're Illyrian, that'll be on me. Number one is like, I will set up this thing for your daughter, and then she will, and that'll be on me if like they find out about it. Like even the doctors are like, we would mix your blood with human blood. We don't care if it would save lives. So everyone is willing to sacrifice to save other people. So yeah, I agree. We're going to, I don't know if it'll be this season, because it is supposed to be 10 years from now, but also Discovery has time travel. So maybe we have time travel.
Right.
So like there's lots of things that can happen. I mean, the engineer has like slight precognition as a thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I think we could, I think it will be the crew who decides to save him, possibly against his own will, because he wants to make sure those younger crew members get saved.
Right. Right.
So I think it'll be very interesting. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Or perhaps the crew inject themselves into the position of those younger crew members. Like the crew are like, we're going to sacrifice ourselves to save their lives and yours,
no,
maybe is where it could build to. So that is a distinct possibility. But yeah, I think changing the timeline in some regard is a distinct possibility. Because it also raises the question of like the dance with canon that we're doing, which is...
Which even timeline, because like the JJ timeline is a different timeline
than the original series. That totally exists
now,
separately.
But now like Discovery has time traveled, and I'm like, is that part of OG series or is this part of new timelines?
Because at first, Discovery was very much like, we are canon, we exist in the regular timeline, I know we have crazy technology, but don't worry, we figure out a way to make that work in the regular timeline. And they don't, really. They have a couple, like, one-off lines of dialogue to be like, this was confidential, so no one will know about...
Why wasn't this show just set later?
Just come on. Or make it Section 9, which is... 9, I think it is? The very secret Black Ops
21?
Section.
Some number.
The section number. But this feels a little bit more in canon, but they could use this and Discovery and its time travel and all this other shit to be like, we are moving forward with a totally different timeline now, if they so choose.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, especially because now we're just going like, Uhura's not supposed to be on this ship. Because in the original in the original OG, like Pike and Spock were the only OG cast members.
Really? Okay.
So Uhura's not supposed to be here. So they've already kind of changed that.
Okay. Okay. And we've got Kirk's father, or I guess Kirk.
I think it's his cousin.
Is it his cousin? I thought it was his father.
No, it's not his father.
No, because his father was supposed to be, was a captain.
Father was a in the JJ timeline, he was. Well, he was only a brief captain because he was like, the other captain died, he took control, he got killed in the...
Fight. Okay.
So, yeah, I can't remember if this is his brother or his cousin. I don't think it's his dad.
No, okay, never mind. All right, well,
we have Kirk, who has done very little except get blown up a little bit.
Yeah, he kind
of... Very, very small amount of Kirk.
I thought they were going to make him a little bit bigger, but he got, like, one line and then kind of faded into the background for two episodes. But
honestly,
I'm okay with that.
It's kind of a funny reverse of what Discovery did, because Discovery was like, it's all about Spock, because Spock's here. And this show was like, hey, there's Kirk. Blow him up and then never bring him up
Boom.
Again.
Kirk's unconscious. Fuck that dude. Fuck that dude.
This ain't a show about Kirk.
Fuck that guy.
In a way that just feels like, okay, sure, I guess. It's not the real Kirk.
All right, well, I'm feeling good on Strange New Worlds. You feeling good?
I'm feeling good. We're only three episodes in, so like it's hard to know if we're still happy about it. But I am, as I said at the beginning, I am very excited for every new episode, which is a nice feeling. There's very few shows that like instill that in me these days.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would we change? So now that we've discussed everything we discussed, what would we change about this show if we could change anything? Before we do ask that final question, we'll remind you, our wonderful listeners, as we do every week, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you might get get your podcasts by hitting subscribe. That guarantees that we're in your feed every week and it helps us move up the charts. And then by leaving a rating and review, that encourages new listeners to actually hit that download button. And it's the only way we kind of like grow and expand and find new audience. And it's a free way to support us and other podcasts that you like. So really take like 3 minutes out of your day and be like, here are three podcasts I like. Open the thing and be like, I like this podcast, 5-star. I like this podcast, 5-star. I like this podcast, 5-star. And it makes a big difference for the podcasters you like to listen to.
Guys, we need your help, and you have all the power in this situation.
Really do.
You're very powerful, and if you can help us, we'd love that. And we'll keep bringing you laughs and nice things, and we will have our hearts be warmed. And so will the other podcasters you leave reviews for. It makes you feel nice and powerful.
Yes.
Who doesn't want to feel nice and powerful?
Yeah, we all want to feel nice and powerful.
I want to feel nice and powerful. I want to feel like Pike.
Write that
nice and powerful.
That's write that in the review. That's what I want to see. This makes me feel nice and powerful. Write that about our show as the review. That's the call to action this week.
Excellent.
This makes me feel nice and powerful.
Love it. We've done it.
So that's a free way to support the podcast. If you want to support the podcast monetarily, you can do so by checking out our Patreon, and you get cool bonuses for doing it, like exclusive episodes of the podcast that we released every month on the Patreon page. This month, we've covered Our Flag Means Death, which is also warm and charming and fun and delectable. So we're talking about that over on the Patreon page.
Delectable is a good word to describe Our Flag Means Death.
Yeah, I didn't. That word just kind of flowed out of me. That just feels natural and organic. Yeah. So that's Our Flag Means Death. We've got that episode live right now on the Patreon page over at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And if you head over there, there's different levels. You can kick in $1 a month, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. You can do yearly, in which case you get a month free. Or if you do monthly, you can just do it according to your budget this month, and you can cancel, change, subscribe, or unsubscribe, whatever you got to do next month. It's according to your budget. Take care of yourself first. And if you got a little something extra, send it our way, and then we'll give you a little something extra for it.
A little exchange of goods for services, and we all win. And thank you to all of our patrons. And also at the $10 level, you get access to all the old episodes at once. So if you can only afford for a month, you can burn through those things.
Check out the back catalog for any ones that you missed that you want to check out. Mm-hmm. Patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And now, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
I would make the show a little bit more patient, and I would reveal things much, much later. This Rebecca Romaine episode, that was episode 3, would be much later in the season. We would have seeded in ideas about how people feel about genetic alterations and like little like hints that she's different. Like, she has super strength. Like, that's very easy to seed in to a show and be like, what was that all about? And kind of like wonder about it later. Other things would just be revealed more slowly. Sing being related to Khan. Maybe she wouldn't have less backstories. I have very few other changes. Yeah, I would like it to be less connected to Discovery. I think I would only keep like Pike saw his future. I think it's very interesting, very well explored. It's a good place to go. And then everything else would just be a little bit more patient. The thing about the doctor having his daughter in the buffer feels like an entire episode's worth of content. It's so weird to just tack it on to the end. I'm like, that's an episode. Like, he's basically Mr. Freeze putting his wife into a cryogenic chamber.
A little bit.
That's a ripe story to tell. I would be a little bit more patient. Like, we like these characters. We're here. You've got a good show. You can sparse it out a little bit more slowly. But I love the episodic nature. I like where everything's going. I like pretty much all the characters. So yeah, overall, huge watch. And just be a little bit more patient. Trust in us that we're going to keep watching Discovery. Mm. Andrew, what would you change?
I love that. I couldn't agree more with all of that. It needs immensely more patience. How about we just make Rebecca Romaine play a Vulcan? Is my big thing. Like, just...
like a full Vulcan, because Spock's only half Vulcan.
Make Rebecca Romaine the fiancé or something, and
ooh,
make that the storyline. Create some tension there. I know you can't really take away the fact that, like, Spock is the first Vulcan, like, in Starfleet.
He could have just got there before her.
Maybe he got there just before her. Maybe she's
a week before.
She's second or something. But, like, I think that, like, really she needs to be cast to cast better for type and for the type of acting and performance that she gives. And it's not this character that she's playing, but I'm not mad about her being on the show. I'm like, I want you to be here, but I want you to play a character that makes a little bit more sense for you. And I think maybe Vulcan, secretly Romulan, anything.
Ooh, secretly Romulan.
Anything other than secretly augmented, because augmented explains, like, strength, which is not something we'd seen from her in these first three episodes when they reveal it, but we'd seen awkward stiffness from her. So secretly Vulcan, secretly Romulan, I think would be great. And yeah, maybe Romulan would even be better, because then Spock still gets to be the first Vulcan in Starfleet, and she gets to be this, like, secret kind of, like, and then it would explain, like, why the captain is so close to her and, like, keeps her secret, knows personally, like, something
about
her.
Romulans are like, yeah, they're like, they're the bad guys most of the time. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of the exact same thing as being augmented story-wise. Like, it
would serve the same purpose.
But it would explain why she's just stiff.
Why she is a little bit who she is. Yeah.
I like that change. Yeah, that fits way better. And like, we still get to keep her around, but just we're like, all right, we'll match her acting style to her character.
She's secretly Romulan now. There we go.
I'm
all about that.
I think that's cool.
And that's my change. Other than that, though, I mean, I love
the show. We're
going to
keep watching the show every
week.
It's
so charming. It's such a delight.
So excited to be excited about Star Trek.
Well, that's it. That's it for this week for Star Trek Strange New Worlds. We're having a blast. Next week, we are going to be back. We're going to be talking about the new season of Stranger Things. So we'll be talking about Stranger Things next week. And as well, if you want more of the podcast, we have an episode on Our Flag Means Death, which is up at the Patreon page right now, patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And if you want to get a hold of us in the meantime, you can reach me online at Ivamey, Ivimey.
You can reach little old me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to you all next week.
Bye.